Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The United by K. M. Reeves, narrated by Lauren Ezzo and Simon Dornay. Chapter 1. Sloane. It really was unfortunate that her twin soul had survived. Not that there was any way Sloane could have predicted that Emery's mate could save her. Mate. The word made her lip curl in a snarl. Why any witch would want to be tethered to a vampire for all of eternity was beyond her, especially August Nicholson. When she'd lived at the castle, he was the epitome of a spoiled, rotten prince with his head lodged in his perfectly rounded ass. He'd changed since then. She hadn't missed the love in his eyes when he looked at Emery, or the fear when his father slit her throat. It was something she hadn't considered possible. Mates were a bond of magic, not meant to be a proclamation of love. And the very thought that the two should go hand in hand made her stomach sour. Not that it would matter in the long run. She'd rectify the issue just as she had everything else. How hard could it be to break a mate bond? All she needed was a mate to test it, and if she had her choice, she knew who she would pick. Sloane rounded the table at the center of the sterile room, her eyes lingering on the naked flesh of the handsome wolf stretched end to end. It turned out he was a better asset than she could have predicted. His wolf was more alpha than beta, and his rage was intoxicating. Although it would have been better if she'd been able to procure a true pack alpha, she couldn't be greedy. Not yet. She'd save that drive for the battles yet to be won. The wolf eyed her with suspicion. He'd been harder to break than the others. Finding out what motivated him had proven difficult, but once she'd learned he'd been the wolf protecting Emery all those months in New Orleans, she knew exactly where to strike. She trailed the tips of her fingers, blackened over time with the use of her dark magic, along the bulging muscles in his arm, down to where the silver cuffs wrapped around his wrist. His dark brown eyes sent daggers in her direction, but he didn't speak. Sloane dragged her eyes along the scars on his thighs where she'd taught him a lesson about speaking out of turn. "Are you going to do as you're told today?" A low growl reverberated against the plain steel walls. That would be a no. His loss, really. Sloane didn't particularly enjoy torturing him. She'd rather save it for those who deserved her wrath. But if he wasn't willing to join her cause, she'd do what it took to get what she needed. "Suit yourself." She shrugged and reached below the metal table to flip a switch. The table groaned and began to tilt, taking the wolf from horizontal to vertical. When it clicked into place, Sloane pulled the glass syringe from her coat pocket and stepped forward, close enough that she could smell the dirt and sweat of her prisoner. He snarled and snapped his elongated fangs in her direction. It really was a shame he was loyal to her sister. He would no doubt make a fine lover. In one swift motion, she stabbed the needle into his jugular vein and pressed down on the plunger. The opalescent purple potion entered his blood, and Sloane opened her free hand, calling her magic to her palm. Darkness flooded the space between them, and the tendrils of her magic wrapped around him. Eyes narrowed, Sloane urged the spell to travel from his neck to his heart. The racing beat of his blood pounded in her mind, and she tasted fear and loathing as her magic maneuvered its way to the organ that would, in moments, send her will to his brain and turn him from loyal wolf to feral animal. She knew the moment it overwhelmed his system, his brown eyes dilating to pure obsidian. Fur erupted from his skin, and his fingers lengthened into claws. It didn't matter that he fought against her. Magic as dark as hers trumped free will every time. Sloane leaned forward and ran her tongue over the ridges of his abdomen to where his heart beat in his chest. "How about now? Are you ready to do as you're told?" she asked again. He snarled at her once more, but this time it wasn't out of hatred. This time, it was because he would do anything to sate the monster inside him. His wolf was hers to control. It sought to claim anything and everything in its path in its quest to find its mate. All Sloane had to do was promise she would bring him back. Sebastian is waiting for you. But I need my army first. I'll give him back to you if you give me what I want.
Mate! He howled and thrashed against the restraints. Dorian!
Sloane raised a brow. That was a new name. Usually his wolf called for Sebastian. Her research had revealed that Sebastian had been a hybrid, wolf and witch, who died. Sloane used that to her advantage. She couldn't bring back his mate any more than she could bring back her own mother. Without the body and fresh blood, it was impossible. But his wolf didn't know that. Occasionally, he would call for Emery and her baby, in which case she'd weave an illusion of her torturing them to get him to comply. But Dorian was a new thread to pull. Who is Dorian?
Fae, mate, faded, his wolf growled. Dorian,
he growled again, and this time the metal of the restraints groaned in protest. Sloane stepped back, and a trickle of fear slid down her spine. If he broke free, she wasn't in a good position to stop him from tearing her apart. She turned away from him and smoothed the front of her coat as she inhaled a steadying breath. Turn the humans, and I'll find Dorian. A low growl was all she got in response. Exiting the room, she nodded at Ren on the other side of the two-way mirror, signaling for her to open the door that would allow the first five drugged humans to enter. The moment they did, the wolf would be released to do his job. And then it would be rinse and repeat until morning, when the full moon receded below the horizon. Who the hell is Dorian? She asked. Ren shrugged. It still struck Sloane as concerning that Ren chose to side with her over her sister. They'd been best friends, but it was only because Ren was tasked with babysitting Emery. Ren felt overlooked. As the daughter of Vishna's sister, she believed that she should have been in line to rule. The best she could hope for was a seat in the inner circle. Apparently, she'd always been fascinated with the darker side of magic, and now that the coven was destroyed, Ren had every intention of becoming Sloane's second in command. And she was good at it. More ruthless than half the elders who'd come before her. Jessie, who had stood silently behind Ren until that moment, spoke up. He's August's right hand. Sloane's eyes widened. August has a fucking fae on his side, and you didn't think this was imperative information? If Jessie had been a pain in the ass when they were culling women, she was even more so now. But Sloane couldn't deny she'd been useful. Jessie brought with her extensive knowledge of the castle and the vampires who lived there, far more than Sloane would have been able to find out herself. Then again, Sloane hadn't been willing to spread her legs for the king. Jessie tossed her blonde hair over her shoulder.
I didn't know he was a fae. What the hell is a fae, anyways?
Never mind. Ren, find me everything you can on the fae and why the hell August has one as his second. Screams erupted from the other side of the glass as their prisoner went to work, ripping open the chests of the humans and slicing through their hearts. Only half of them would survive the change, and, among those, only half would survive the spell that would instill bloodlust and prolong their lives. But those who did would be loyal only to her. They would become an unstoppable force to be reckoned with.
The dead are piling up, mistress. Where would you like us to dispose of them?
She'd been careful thus far not to let Emery and August know what she was up to. But seeing as she'd almost amassed the army she needed to destroy them, it was time to start the next phase of her plan. Leave them somewhere they will be found. It's high time we let my sister and her mate know we are coming for them.
Chapter 2. Emery. A name.
What they were doing, the deliberations and decisions of these advisors, would echo forever in supernatural history. They were the advisors to the soon-to-be-reigning Vampire King of the Americas, in a time of war, no less, and the crotchety old bastards were hung up on a damn name.
All we're saying is Vanya is a strong name for a princess.
Constantine, the oldest of August's inherited council and the biggest thorn in her side, argued. It shouldn't surprise Emery. They were pro-vampire, and against anything remotely related to the witches. It was a running theme with them.
We are not naming our daughter after a queen famous for her high witch body count and playful murder sprees.
Emery's darkness swirled in her chest, as it had been doing more often, thriving on any anger and chaos that surrounded her. The black magic that mixed with her golden light scared the shit out of her as it continued to grow more prudent in its attempts to slither its way to the forefront. But Emery had seen what it could do. She'd made witches bleed and felt the sinister intent woven in its tendrils. It might be a part of her, but she didn't want to touch it and risk becoming like Sloane, especially while pregnant. Emery gritted her teeth and tamped down the untapped magic. As much as the vampire advisors pissed her off, they didn't deserve her darkness. At least not yet. Though some days they tread a fine line. Most days she couldn't figure out how August's father ran a kingdom with these idiots advising him. Well, that wasn't true. She suspected they weren't advising him at all. Lewin ran the kingdom as he saw fit, a dictator if she'd ever seen one. His advisors were just there for show, and the notoriety of being in the room where decisions were made, even if they didn't actually contribute anything of worth. Emery glanced over to where her mate sat beside her, his hand steepled in front of his mouth to hide his smirk. He was enjoying this. Jackass. The darkness that begged for release sent her images of Emery tying August to his ornate throne and punishing him for wasting her time. In particular, it wanted her to suck his cock and bring him to the edge of insanity before letting him finally come inside her where his seed belonged. Fuck, she needed to get laid. The two of them had been so damn busy running the kingdom in the wake of the attacks during the hunt that they'd barely seen one another except asleep. She also needed to figure out what she was going to do about the dark magic woven through her soul like a tightly knit sweater. The images were its newest attempts to goad her into tapping into its menacing intentions. August slipped his hand onto her thigh, likely because he sensed the shift in her mood through their mate bond. He'd become more overprotective of her since the attack on the castle and the merging of himself. She'd assumed getting August back would mean she'd get her reasonable mate back. Her assessment had been wrong. Merging August and Augustine only enhanced both sides of his personalities. So much so that she was still learning who she should expect on any given day. Scratch that. Any given moment. Most of the time, she didn't mind, though she preferred August in the streets and Augustine in the sheets. When his personality reversed and she got Augustine in the council room is when she was really thrown for a loop. She'd finally convinced August to compromise about her role in the ongoing war. She wouldn't overexert herself with magic until she was no longer pregnant with his child, and he would try to stop being an overbearing ass. The arrangement was an easy one on Emery's part. If August hadn't made her promise she wouldn't touch her dark magic until after their daughter was born, the images of the witches with their blood being pulled from their souls haunted her dreams and were enough to deter her. Their cries echoed in her ears, and she'd felt the power she could wield. She didn't want to be defined by that. What August didn't realize was that just because she wasn't training her magic or looking for her sister with the Sentinels didn't mean she wasn't busy from sunup to sundown trying to put out the fires of their people, of which there were many. Which is what she expected to be discussing at this meeting. Not names for their daughter. They should have been discussing the fact that Sloane had gone mostly silent for almost 3 months. She still had Ansel, and the only sign of her was the continued kidnappings of wolves, vampires, and humans, none of whom they'd been able to track. Or they could be discussing the fact that earlier that morning, the Pineshore pack found a pile of what looked to be bodies on their lands, steeped in Sloane's purple death magic. But that wasn't a topic of discussion. Neither was the fact that the nobles wanted nothing to do with the witches, and that was becoming more and more of a problem. Sure, they pretended and played nice in the castle, but if they had it their way, they'd kick their potential mates to the curb without a second glance. The tension grew every day. Another old vampire shuffled the papers in front of him and lifted his hand to gather her attention.
But Vanya also... Emery slammed her hand down on the war room table.
sending papers and dust flying. No!
Her abdomen tightened with the rise of her temper, and she had to hide her wince.
Damn Braxton Hicks.
August squeezed her thigh, and she could feel his apprehension through their bond. Emery responded by sending him a push of reassurance that she was okay. Each of the advisors visibly jerked back at the sight of her, and she didn't need to see the soft amber light radiating through the dimly lit circular chamber to know her eyes were glowing. Likely they were also seeing the rings of darkness that lined her irises pulse and grow black. Emery inhaled a breath, steadying the dark surge in her chest. Her eyes were a constant reminder of who she was. Their glowing quality gave her authority, but also served as a reminder to the advisors that she wasn't like them. It didn't matter that she sat in the place of their queen. It didn't matter that she carried their heir, or that she'd proven herself to be on their side. She was still a witch, and while they respected her to a certain degree, they also feared her. She wore the visage of their enemy and harbored the same magic in her veins. Well, almost. Thankfully, her magic was more light than dark. Mostly. Hopefully. She couldn't deny the weight of the doubt in her mind. Was she a danger to the people around her? The warmth of her light magic swirled in her chest, taking the place of the dark at the same time the bond she shared with August radiated a mix of amusement and annoyance. Emery didn't need to look at him to know he was biting the inside of his cheek to hide the lopsided grin she loved so much. She could practically feel it down their mate bond.
You're loving this.
Watching my mate chew my advisors a new asshole? Absolutely. August teased down the bond that tied their souls together and allowed them to communicate in one another's heads. It was his preferred method of communicating with her, mostly because there was no denying the feelings in their words when mixed with their emotion-sharing mate bond. It was his August side shining through. She'd never tell him, but his August side was a bit of a sap.
This meeting is a sham, and you know it,
Emery argued. Anger surged in her chest, and she struggled to keep the darker tendrils of magic firmly coiled within her.
We shouldn't be arguing about a damn name when there is plenty we could be doing to settle the tensions in our own court. They are trying to ice the witches out, keep them in the fields, and only deal with them as necessary.
We are doing everything we can, August placated, but she could sense the lie in his words.
Are we? They are using this meeting to discuss a name, so we don't have to address the elephant in the room. The fact is, they would rather we didn't find a way to connect mates with one another. They'd rather continue in a world where we are enemies. They don't see us as a force to be reckoned with, August. They see me as another enemy to their kingdom, just one that they can tolerate for now. But how long will that last?
It felt like she was fighting a battle on two fronts. The only thing uniting both sides was the rage that came with the great loss during the hunt, combined with the fact that Emery had nearly died. Though many would argue she should have stayed dead. Some even suggested it. The only reason she remained alive was because August threatened to kill anyone who tried to take her from him. Sometimes she really wished he would go back to being Augustine, and not the diplomatic August in front of her. Maybe then they'd be getting somewhere instead of arguing over a name.
You're right. I wouldn't let them kill you. And I'll keep in mind you like my ragey side better.
She felt the smirk he was no doubt wearing. Damn it. Emery dropped her head to the table and exhaled a heavy breath. She hadn't realized she'd sent her thoughts down the bond, a mistake that often occurred when she let her emotions get the better of her. It became impossible to filter her thoughts from the bond. August sent a blast of soothing emotions toward her, but she shrugged him off. They only confirmed he wasn't going to rage, even though he absolutely should.
What does your majesty think? One of the advisors asked.
Emery turned her gaze to her mate and raised a brow. This was his chance.
Regarding my daughter's name?
August shrugged at the vampire like he hadn't just been talking Emery off a ledge and gave her a wink.
Happy wife, happy life.
Emery rolled her eyes at his cop-out, even though she loved the way that word rolled off his tongue and made her insides turn to mush. Wife. She fidgeted with the heirloom ring on her third finger. It seemed so trivial when she and August shared so much more than just a commitment spoken out loud. They were mates, tethered by the fates. But if he wanted to remind everyone that she was his wife, she wasn't going to stop him. Especially because she knew how much the advisors hated it. Now, if she could just get him to give her a little more leeway in taking a stand for her people and calling out his own, instead of making her a glorified piece of arm candy, maybe she could use his motto against him. You best remember that. August parted his lips and made a show of running his tongue over his elongated fang.
That's one.
Hello, Augustine. Flutters erupted in her core, and thoughts of war flitted to the edges. Emery clenched her thighs. Damn hormones taking her from one end of the spectrum to the other with just two words. Despite the frustration she held against him, she loved this game he played. She was glad it wasn't something lost when August and Augustine became one. Eye rolls annoyed the shit out of her fiancé. But eye rolls also meant punishment, and punishment meant alone time with her mate. Alone time with little to no clothing and, if she was lucky, a light spanking. Emery sent a silent prayer to the stars that he followed through on his promise. At least the problem of getting laid would be solved.
But she's not your wife, Your Majesty.
Emery whipped her gaze to the advisor who spoke out against her mate, her brows meeting her forehead. A low growl bubbled from his throat as August narrowed his eyes at the offending advisor. She thought his name was Roland. It didn't really matter, though, because he was running the risk of being dead.
I suggest you choose your words very carefully. She is my intended, my fiancé, my mate, and your future queen.
August placed his hands on the table and stood, sending his chair tumbling behind him.
In fact, let's make it official. Call whoever needs to be called. Let's get this over with so everyone can see that this is not changing, ever. My mate wants me to take action, and I want you to see that she is our future, as is our daughter.
All of his advisors spoke up at once in protest.
But Your Majesty, you can't just...
Emery reached out and placed a hand on his arm, sending love and calming down their bond, even though she was ready to fight at his side for this. They'd come so far together, and she couldn't wait to stand with him. She loved the way he claimed her. But unfortunately, as much as she hated to admit it, their marriage was about more than them. August, we can't. As much as I want to marry you this very second, our people need this. Those who see us as their future need to be a part of our union, so they can be a part of building our kingdom. August turned, his twisted blue eyes locked on her.
And I need you.
The evidence of his need swirled through their bond. Love, lust, desire, dedication, desperation. He pulled her against him, crashing his lips to hers.
This fucking vampire. A shiver racked her body as he sucked her bottom lip between his fangs.
It didn't matter how many times he kissed her, she couldn't get enough of it. Of him. August swallowed the involuntary moan that escaped her, and the hand that kept her pulled tight against him fisted the fabric of her dress. Remembering that they were standing in front of a room full of vampire advisors, Emery tried to pull away, but August tugged her tighter against him. He didn't seem to mind the gasps and heated stares coming from his advisors. He bit down, piercing two small holes with his fangs, and sucked her blood between his lips.
Mine.
Emery tugged back until he released. Forever. And despite your barbaric, possessive tendencies, I will be your queen. But let's plan a coronation when we are no longer at war. She spoke out loud against his lips, in an effort to reassure the vampires who were now cowering in their seats that he wasn't completely insane. Not that they'd ever give her the same consideration. His eyes swirled with indecision and desire.
You know I love when you call yourself my queen.
He'd grown so much since he'd embraced every facet of himself, but at his core he was still just a man.
Get out,
August growled, and Emery looked away from him, shaking her head.
Your Majesty,
if you are not out of here in 5 seconds, I will rip your eyes from your sockets and shove them in your ears. I also suggest you talk amongst yourselves and figure out a plan to include the witches on your council moving forward. But now, August roared.
Emery pressed her lips together to stifle the smile at his orders to include her people, while her thighs chafed, trying to hide how much his barbaric possession turned her on. Chairs shifted, and his advisors moved in a blur of motion until only Emery and August were left in the room. Maybe this meeting was worth it after all.
Chapter 3. August. Was that necessary? She asked as the last advisor shuffled out of the room, pulling the door closed behind him. Completely, he softly growled against her lips, teasing them with his own. You can't just end a meeting because your cock wants to rise to the occasion whenever someone points out I'm not your wife. August scoffed and didn't bother to point out that her thighs were clenching, and he could smell the arousal pooling between her legs. It was about more than that, and she knew it. He wouldn't even try to argue that she wanted this just as much as he did. Somehow, in the last 5 minutes, she'd become the diplomatic one, leaving him to take desperate measures to ensure he got what they both wanted. He knew at heart Emery wanted his people to love her, nobles included. But he didn't give a shit what they thought most of the time. They would fall in line or wouldn't. Either way, as soon as he was officially crowned, those advisors would be replaced with people he trusted. Until then, they had to play the game with his father's leftovers and tread lightly when implementing changes to the old guard, even if they were pompous, bigoted assholes with their heads stuck in the past, who demanded he take them into consideration every waking moment of every day. Usually he didn't mind. Listening to irritating advisors was part of the job. But the time away from his mate had started to weigh on him. The kingdom demanded his attention all day, every day, which left little time for the two of them. If he had to go investigate the bodies left by Emery's traitorous sister, he was going to do it after a proper send-off from his mate. August slid his hands down the curves of her hips, his thumbs caressing her tight, rounded belly. Yet, Emery, you're not my wife yet. And I can and will ensure that they know who the fuck you are every time someone questions your legitimacy at my side. August, little witch, don't fight this, he sighed. We've both been so damn busy. You with Lily and Bronwyn trying to keep the witches happy while researching how to create Celeste's damn spell, and me trying to keep all the moving pieces in order and find Sloane's whereabouts while keeping the peace between the factions, not only in our kingdom, but around the world. Let me have you. Soon it won't be just us. August dropped to his knees, and his hands drifted over her belly as he peppered it with kisses. Ignore what I'm about to do to your mother, Gyalakvik. Little Moon. If Emery was the stars in his sky, his daughter was the one who brought light to his dark nights. He already loved her more than life itself, but he'd be remiss if he didn't consider how much their lives were going to change when she entered the world. It both thrilled and scared the ever-loving shit out of him.
August, I am the size of a damn whale. We aren't doing this. At least, not here.
She may have feigned disinterest, but the way she rolled her hips forward told a different story. I thought you liked it when I embraced my savage nature. He ran his hands over the swell of her belly and down the curve of her hips. August loved her pregnant body. The way it adapted to bring new life into the world made him want to worship every inch of her. He wanted to be sure she knew every change was perfect and beautiful. He hated that she didn't see herself the way he...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?